can step right over. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 405. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Streaming live at KOOP.org. Remember, everybody, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
He thought.
It is Wednesday, March 22nd. On the show today, we have Vortex Rep and their show, Underground. And of course, later, not of course, but later, we will have Broadway Across America's Beautiful, the Carole King musical. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the World Theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Boise, Idaho, and Medellin, Colombia. Stick with us.
And I don't know how I even start.
I've been to Medellin, Colombia.
Yeah.
I was about to say, have you been there?
I have been there before the world knew, or before I knew about drug cartels. and it is a beautiful little college town.
What musical did you do there, Lisa?
I did not do musicals. I did
it was a play.
That was Zoológico de Cristal.
Oh, also known as The Glass Meningere.
I did do a musical. Fantásticos.
What's that?
Los Fantásticos. Pronto va llover, yo me veo.
Oh, the Fantastics.
The Fantastics. Okay, which we're going to talk about today. So, checking in with Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
How are you guys doing?
Doing.
Just doing great.
Y'all are busier than one-armed paper hangers.
I've never really understood that statement.
All right, so you know how to hang paper? It takes two hands to hang paper.
Well, yeah.
All right.
Nicole's busy.
If you only have one arm.
She had the show go into previews last night.
She did. What show was that, Nicole Shiro?
Greater Tuna Tour.
The Greater Tuna Tour, which is pretty incredible.
Honored, reimagined and directed by co-creator Jason Williams. Kicking off in McAllen, Texas.
McAllen, which is what I was trying to say before I came up with Medellin. Just to go on record, is that's where I was going. But you know,
it will be heading to Austin.
I don't plan anything. Yes, it's gonna in April. It'll be at the Long Center, right?
Correct. April 14th and 15th.
TheLongCenter.org for information.
Correct. If you're not in Austin and you want to know the other dates, tunatouring.com.
Amazing.
Tuna touring or tuna touring?
Tuna touring.
That's so funny. That was my sorority name.
I was about to say tuna touring spelling.
It's true.
Well, last week we were arguing all over the pronunciations. Tomato, tomato, potato, tomato.
Okay, let's introduce the folks. We got so much stuff to go through today. We're going to go at lightning speed. Be warned. We have Rudy Ramirez. Hi, Rudy.
Hi, Lisa.
Welcome back. Mark Puhay.
Hello, Lisa. Glad to be back.
We are happy to have you back. New person to the show, Lisa B. Thompson.
Good afternoon. Thank you,
Good
Lisa.
Afternoon. Yeah, everybody give her a golf clap. Like,
yeah.
Golf clap for Lisa. Mr. Robert Tolero, extraordinaire.
Hello out there in Radio Land. Hello.
We are so happy. I am so happy with this group. This is going to be so much fun. So we're just going to like blast through these things because there's so much stuff I want to talk about that isn't part of like the really news. But we had two openings since we've been on. One was The Price. Anybody want to say anything about that? The Price? It was so, the reviews were good, but not great.
That's why I was like, I only kind of quickly glanced and I just kind of got a, eh.
But Ben Brantley says it's sympathetically directed and ardently acted.
Which is a review we all want to get? Yeah. Question mark.
Yes.
So this has got Tony Shalhoub in it.
First of all, I love the Tony Shalhoub. Just want to say that.
It is. That's why I said it. Too. Danny DeVito.
Love Danny DeVito. Hilarious.
Bob Hilario. By the way, this is a little radio lesson. He just gave me one of those hand things like, I don't know. That doesn't work on the radio.
I know, but you don't have to answer it.
Yeah. So, anyway. You don't like Tony Shalhoub?
Danny.
Oh, Danny DeVito.
Danny has some issues.
Well, you know what? There's interesting. There's on the New York Times and on the link that will be on our site, there's a little clip of it, a thing between him and Mark Ruffalo, and he's against type here.
Not a subtle actor. Turns
out.
No. No, that's shocking.
But come on, I loved him in Twins, I have to say.
Absolutely.
So also Jessica Hecht is in it, Danny DeVito, Mark Ruffalo we talked about, and Tony Shalhoub.
Just say Tony Shalhoub again.
Tony Shalhoub. You mean Tony Shalhoub?
Yeah.
Oh, him.
Oh, you know what? This didn't work. Oh, well, okay. So there you go. Reviews. Okay. The one I want to talk about is Joan of Arc,
See, Rudy got excited too.
Do you mean Joan of Arc Into the Fire?
Into the Fire. Which got sort of slaughtered here.
Right, it did.
It got slaughtered.
Into but literally into the fire.
Literally.
Up in flames.
But it was, this is the same team that put together Here Lies Love, which was incredible. I saw it. Anybody else see it but me?
I did.
Hello.
It was my Broadway singing debut, or I guess off-Broadway singing debut.
Oh, please say more.
So I knew the soundtrack going in because of the promos that he released with all the like Cyndi Lauper and Tori and some people. And so I was singing along at the end, and Ruthie and Miles comes up to me and like gives me a big hug and puts the mic in front of my face.
Oh.
So I got to sing the end of Here Lies Love.
Wouldn't it be great to have that on tape?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I had a great time. And I want to do something like that and that kind of thing.
Yes.
I think it's so much fun. But it was a site-specific piece about Imelda Marcos and Ferdinand Marcos. And Ruthie Ann Miles was awesome.
David Byrne and Fatboy Slim.
Right, they did the music. We haven't gotten there yet.
And they did this and they did that. So
well, no, we haven't. We didn't talk about them, but yet. But again, Fatboy Slim. It's with David Byrne with Fatboy Slim and what's his name? The director. Oh God, just lost his name. He also did Here's Lies Love.
Alex Timbers.
Yes,
I worship him. He's amazing.
So it said it opened in a blaze of monotony at the Public Theater.
Once again, a review we all strive to get.
With no question marks.
And then he goes on to say, I never thought I'd find myself preferring music by Mr. Lloyd Webber to that of Mr. Byrne.
Oh!
Is that Brantley too?
That's all Ben Brantley, yeah. Not great, but I do want to play there again. You can see it on our link on our site, but I want to play a little piece of music because there's a great, it looks fantastic if you look at the pictures.
It does.
And just give this a little listen.
David Lober.
That wasn't it. Sorry, hold on. I'm going out of order here, and so we'll find it. We'll find it later.
It'll magically appear.
Or maybe, oh, you know what? we're using it to the outro. We'll hear a little bit of this show on the outro of it. So that was my fault, and I apologize to everybody.
You're forgiven.
So let's take a little break, and let's. I'm going to let Nicole introduce this segment because I can't remember the name of it.
I do. I remember the name of it.
Let's introduce
it.
Wait.
Bob's Broadway Breakdown. Bob's Broadway Breakdown. Breakdown. Broadway.
So there was an interesting cadre there were a whole bunch of people from Austin, mostly middle-aged men of a certain
age.
Demographic. That all was in New York at the same time, and seemingly you all saw the same shows.
Well, we didn't know that was happening at the same time, was great.
It wasn't planned.
Midler does that to a lot of communities.
But right. Bob, you saw five shows.
I saw five shows, and big. It's nothing more fun than going to New York, thinking you're going to have a spring day, and it has a blizzard instead. So you're going through
you were there for Snowpocalypse.
I was there for Snow Day. We thought there were closed shows, but they did not. New York does not like to close shows. You can imagine why.
Well, but they were deeply discounting things.
They were. That was very close. So I saw five great shows. Jitney, if you love your August Wilson, you will not. I think is closing already.
It's
a fantastic show, but I think there's a film going to be from you.
Talking before that. What's his name?
Denzel Washington
is committed to putting all of the Pittsburgh cycle on film.
Yeah.
Just awesome.
It's just terrific. If you like Fences, when this all comes in, Jitney is a beautiful, beautiful piece of theater. It's the only play I saw. Then I went into Musical Land and Legend Week at
yes,
New
you
York.
Did.
Right. So I said, well, I have to go see War Paint because Patti LuPone and Christine Ebersole are in it.
Yep.
Right.
And
of course. And it is a spectacle beyond belief.
So let's make sure everybody knows this has yet to open.
Correct.
So
this
you
is
saw
preview.
It in previews,
mm-hmm.
And you saw it. So
yes, it's the story of Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden.
Also makeup, my sorority names.
Makeup queens. And it follows their life from the 20s to the 60s. The costumes are absolutely going to get nods, if not win at all. And the songs are wonderful. Going there to see your two stars. The book is a little weak in my world, and the choreography is a little bit. That's it there, but the story is really interesting.
Who wrote the music?
I don't know.
Okay, well,
he'll find out. I'll have my able assistant.
Oh, my gosh, he hits it to Nick as the assistant. He'll find out.
Okay, right, and what's and next on the on the agenda?
Next legend, of course, is Glenn Close and Sunset Boulevard. It's selling about 85% right now.
Right.
But
it did not do great, but she got incredible reviews.
Right, and she's everything you want her to be for a legend, except when you're at the Palace, you may as well be in outer space, because when you have the cheap seats...
Oh, so were you in the...
I don't do that. But it did not matter because of watching her work was really, really... really beautiful. So if you're going to New York and you want to see a legend, go see Sunset Boulevard.
Now you're getting the ones that I want to talk
Come
about.
Come From Away is in preview now. This
now it's opened.
This has opened.
It opened last week.
Right. So this has traveled from Toronto to Chicago. It started in Canada, ended up, and it's a marvelous story. And it's a story basically of this group of people who took in all these 9/11 planes that landed in Newfoundland.
Yes.
And the relationship of the people in Newfoundland who don't have enough room for, I think, was 6,000.
Yeah, their town doubled. They're a town of 6,000, and so it's based on a true story.
Yeah, and it's beautiful, and it's all done with 12 chairs, 2 tables, and a revolve. And it's so pure theater. It's so pure story theater. It's a beautiful narrative. It moves like lightning. It's a one act. There's no intermission. And I think it's going to get many, many nods, if not take the whole thing.
We've been excited about it.
Dear Evan Hansen is going to give it a run for his money. Speaking of Dear Evan Hansen, when I went to see Dear Evan Hansen, I sat next to or right in front of the producers of Come From Away.
Oh, terrific.
And isn't that the music that played us in from Dear Evan
Hansen? And I meant to talk about that, but I was going to go back and circle back and back announce that after the segment that we like to call...
Bob's Broadway Breakdown. Bye, Bob.
So Hello Dolly had a $9 million pre-sale about 6 months ago, and I bought 2 tickets, and I'm part of that $9 million pre-sale.
Now, did you have good seats for this?
I had great seats for Hello D.
You bought this a while.
I wanted to see the first preview.
So remind our listeners who is playing Dolly.
Some unknown. Her name is Bette Midler.
Bette.
And this is actually her first lead on Broadway.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
No,
I think
isn't
first
that
lead.
Crazy?
She started in Fiddler on the Roof as one of the girls.
Yes.
And then she went on to her other career. But this is actually the first time she has to carry a show. And
what about Sue Menger's piece?
A musical.
Musical.
Yes, she did do a Broadway show where she sat on a sofa for the whole show.
Ooh.
Well, it's true. We were there when we were doing Anne, and she was down the street. But anyway.
That's true.
Hello, Dolly is everything you expect it to be. She got a 5-minute standing ovation before
of
she
course.
Said one word.
Yeah, and I have some issues with that, but
I understand.
But I'll just keep
it's
my
just
mouth
this
shut.
Love affair that New York has for her because of all the work she's been doing.
My issue isn't with her specifically, but I have a problem with entrance applause in certain environments, but entrance standing ovation, I
totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I totally agree. But this is because it was first audience.
Yep.
All of that.
Oh, did you see the first preview?
First audience. Yeah.
Oh my!
That's why I bought a ticket.
Because
we know what it's like to go through technical rehearsals all the time. Then you do a first preview for a first audience. You have no idea what you have. Mm-hmm. And
that was last
there.
Thursday night, wasn't
Correct.
It, or Wednesday night?
Because
Wednesday was the Gypsy Run.
It was Wednesday night.
Wednesday night.
Yeah. And so it was very, 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 very beautifully done. She was very, very funny, has a twinkle in her eye. David Hyde Pierce, you'd think, would not be good for
it. I would. I think he's
wonderful.
Really?
He's delightfully comical.
I love him.
And at one point in the play, she obviously did something incorrect.
No.
She was supposed to not have her handbag on her arm because she had to take his hand. And they're singing a song, and she realizes she's got that handbag on her arm. And she gently takes it off, starts walking away, and he gets the giggles. So he sings. He sings while he's laughing, and she's laughing too. So it had a wonderful thing. Then at the end of the play, which is beautifully designed by Santo Laquasto, who I hung out with afterwards a little bit, as the curtain's going down, the very final thing, she lays down on the ground, just exhausted in a humorous way, and everyone just loved her. So I think it's going to have a great run. She's a legend also. So
yeah, and it opens, I believe, next week.
So
yep.
You should be
so
ready.
Looking forward to that.
Kind of exciting. I'm kind of very jealous of all your little shows.
Yeah, very jealous. Trip. Look at that. How long were you in New York? Because that's a lot of shows.
I was
shows
in New York 4 days and saw five shows or something.
You did good.
It's what you do there.
What what you do there. Mm-hmm. And eat what I did last time.
And eat $1 and eat pizza. Slices.
Yes.
Well,
yeah. I splurge for the $2 pizzas.
Thank you. That's my report.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Woo-hoo!
That's Bob. Nice.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
So, speaking of previews, Groundhog Day had its first preview. Did y'all hear about what happened?
No, but I saw that there was a kerfuffle or like something happened.
There was a kerfuffle.
Yes.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. There was evidently there's three turntables that run, and a turntable went down. And they could not do it. So they stopped the show while the technicians tried to fix it. And what they ended up doing was basically doing a concert version of Act 1 with some pieces of Act 2. And
which is relatively cool. But it's also pretty common in previews, which is awesome.
Relatively common. And the entire audience got comps for future dates, which is good. But I want to... as a stage manager, and Bob, you will appreciate this. I want to play a little piece of what the producer said to the audience after the show. So take a listen to this.
David Lober, our stage manager, has done absolute miracles. But we have literally, honestly, one of probably the greatest stage crew in New York City at the moment, standing in the wings, watching the show.
I just love it when the unsung heroes. I was talking about the B. Iden Payne Awards here, and we have a B. Iden Payne a committee member here, and one of the B. Iden Payne Awards is stage manager, and I think it's, and I will just say this out loud, I think it's a ridiculous award, because if a stage manager is doing their job correctly, you do not know they exist.
Exactly.
And if you know that the stage manager exists, it means they are not doing a very good job. So it's sort of an odd award, but that's, so rarely do you get a chance to be recognized like that in front of an audience, and that's sort of their own little curtain call, and that's really sweet.
Very nice.
That's the end of that story. I just need to play this before because I don't want to run out of time because I love this, and I found it before we went on. So, you know, James Corden has a whole bunch of parodies that he does.
Yes.
And so this last night or the night before, this is Tim Minchin. Did you see this?
Hello, it's Tim Minchin and Matilda.
So
hello.
Tim Minchin, Ben Platt, and Abigail Spencer, and James Corden doing a send-up of Tim Minchin's When I Grow Up from Matilda. Just give a listen. I don't think we're going to be able to have time to play the whole thing, but I will have the whole thing as it's a YouTube clip as a link on our site. So just give a listen. You'll get an idea of what this is. So the first person you're going to hear singing is Tim Minchin, and he plays our current president.
When I grow up, I will be president and build big walls, ban Muslims, play with Putin's, grab of the lady grown-ups. And when I grow up, I'll be press secretary of this land and lie about sizes of crowds and hands, ignore climate change till Earth is blown up. And when I grow up, I will be chief strategist so I can put my Breitbart fist inside my puppets inside bits.
And I will wake up
all grown up.
And it goes on from there. So we should say, if people know the number at all, it takes place on a swing set. And that was Tim Minchin playing Donald Trump, Ben Platt playing Sean Spicer, James Corden playing, what's his name, Breitbart guy, Steve Bannon, and Abigail Spencer playing Kellyanne Conway, who was sitting on her on the swing like she was sitting on that sofa in the. But what's great about this parody is at the end, they all have little name tags that say who they are. And at the end, so they say, and the actual song says, "And that's not right." And they do that. They pull off their thing, and they said, they sing "That's Not Right," and basically us have to change it. So, good. There you go. By the way, I should say that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not that of Co-op, the board of directors, or the staff. They are simply my own. Zing.
Zang.
Nicole, is there anything in your list you want to talk about? Is there anything that you really want to?
Oh, well, we can get more in detail later, but the fact that Reeve Carney and Patrick Page are back on stage rocking it,
I'm
a little excited.
Why don't you tell folks what they're doing? Because I don't know.
Oh, my God. I can't remember. It's like, is it Greek mythology? It's all, oh my God, I can't remember the name of the show. It begins with an H. Hele. I can see the stage. It's folk music,
okay,
and there's
right.
instruments,
right. it's
and they're
okay.
playing, and it'll come to me. But hey, I'm excited.
Hades Town?
No. It's based on like
new?
Mythological, like based on past writing. Oh my God.
All right, let's not worry about it. Let's just move on. So anybody see Beauty and the Beast yet? And what do we think?
Not yet.
Anybody want to see Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah,
yes.
Sure.
Okay, well, thank you all for being on the show.
Did you see it?
No, I want to see it though. Which is, I am not a fan of the show, but this live action looks pretty cool. And they're doing a live action of, oh my God, what I just heard today.
Aladdin.
And yeah. then another one too, I think.
There's controversy with Beauty and the Beast.
Controversy.
Yep. The other thing I wanted to... Oh, Sweeney Todd. Oh, Mrs. This was yesterday. They showed the filmed version of Sweeney Todd with Angela Lansbury and Lynn Caramue. And I missed it. It was yesterday. And there's no more showings.
That's it.
But the good news, speaking of television, oh my God. What's the Stephen Sondheim, Merrily We Roll Along?
Oh, that documentary.
The documentary, The Best Worst Ever.
Yes.
Which was only available as a pay on one of the services, is now available on all streaming services, including Netflix. Ooh. So I know one person here in this room will be watching it.
Hades Town.
Hades Town.
Thank you, sorry. Did you say
Hades Town? Yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
There you go. She wasn't.
Say that,
she
sorry.
Was not listening to you, Rudy Ramirez.
Like, yay!
I thought you said something with an A.
Okay, so the other thing I want to talk about is Oregon Shakespeare Festival. They're just doing some incredible work around diverse things and really doing the right thing in terms of their commitment to mirroring the demographics of our world with what they show on stage. And to that end, they really have been very persistent about making sure that they have a season that has got a lot of diversity and a lot of things to do that really mimic what we are. They are also doing an Oklahoma. They've been working with Rodgers and Hammerstein Foundation. They don't say which couple this is, but there's going to be a same-sex couple, one of the leads. So do you, Bob, you're nodding.
No,
do you
I'm
know
not
which
really
couple
sure.
They,
I read about
they,
it. I thought I thought the whole play was turned into a same-sex.
No, there's just one
just
one of
the
main lead couples.
Oh, I see.
I'm going to guess it's Ado Annie.
She's the gayest one in the show.
I think it's going to be Ado Annie.
Did you say hello?
Yeah. because the peddler could be, there's no...
Allie Hackam.
Allie Hackam.
Also one of...
Yes.
Very, very, yeah.
Sistering.
Yeah, exactly.
Judd. It's going to be
Judd.
Oh my
God, y'all are cracking me up.
But one of the things I like that Bill Rauch, the creative director there, the artistic director there said... he said, we in leadership positions need to do everything we can to reflect the world we live in. And they're really walking the walk. They're even doing Sweat by Lynn Nottage,
yes.
who is going to be on Broadway for the very first time.
With a Pulitzer Prize.
Right.
Like, oh, you know, because she's okay. She's good enough now.
Yeah, she's good enough.
And the great article today in the New York Times about Her and Paula Vogel. Yes. Both of them finally making it to Broadway.
Right.
And that's a show that I really want to talk about.
The Paula Vogel show?
Sweat.
Oh, Sweat. Yes. Sweat sounds amazing.
With Jonna Day.
I wanted to see it.
One of the most underappreciated Broadway treasures. Yes. Yeah.
So Michael Paulson, thank you for writing article today.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, that was
thank
a good article.
That, up.
That, by the way, will be linked on our site as well.
Excellent.
Can I have that in there? So the last thing I just want, I'm not going to talk about it, but I'm going to point you to our site, Offstage On Air, to see this. There's a lovely article about the Battle of Miss Saigon. It goes through the history of what happened in 1990 when Jonathan Pryce, who created the role of the emperor, not emperor, what's his name?
Engineer.
The engineer. I've never seen the show, admitted. In London, when it came over, they were going to bring Jonathan Pryce with it because he had a lot of awards. People made a stink because he is not Asian. He had to put on prosthetics. Equity wouldn't allow him to come over. They relented. He ended up coming over and doing it. But since then, no other person playing the engineer has been Caucasian. So it was a bad thing. But this is people that were involved in the old productions, in the London production, and the current production, and talking about their feelings and their experiences in the matter. And it's done in real time from what happened in the 90s all the way through today. And it's a very interesting article. So
I
that will be
I have to tell
like,
you, they were performing on the Today Show. I think it was like a week ago. I text you, I think. I was like, I can't believe I'm sitting here singing my brains out. I love this show. Why do I love this show so much? I couldn't. I knew every word, still hadn't listened really? To the album in 12 years. And I was just... I could hear the helicopter. I could see Gigi getting down. I was just got very excited. Just saying.
How do you feel? I can't tell.
I got excited.
All right, we got to take a little break. I should say, and I forgot, I said I was going to do it, and then I didn't do it. Our first and last number here is from Dear Evan Hansen, because I realized that I had not, I saw the show. It's great. I didn't have the music until today. We've never played it on this show that I'm aware of. And so I played it. So that first piece was from Dear Evan Hansen, and it was the part where he is telling the dead boy's sister what the dead boy thought of her, but it was really what he thought of her. So it was very, very interesting. So let's go and listen to a little bit of Joan of Arc, Into the Fire. This is Sword and Fire. I kind of like it. Let's reintroduce, and by the way, I should tell everybody, you're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nick Mayo and Nicole Shiro. And now we're going to introduce the folks from the Vortex show, The Underground Leap by Lisa B. Thompson. We'll just start by reintroducing Lisa B. Thompson. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled to be here.
We are thrilled to have you here. Mark Puhay, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here.
Mark Puhay is one of the actors in the show, and Rudy Ramirez is the director.
Hello.
Before we talk to you, so Lisa, I gave you a job before we went on the air, right?
The number job?
Yeah, I gave you a number job. What number did you say? Yeah, I asked you to pick a number between 2 and 52.
And I said 18.
18.
The age of consent.
Let's take the time. Yeah. And that's so important. Here we go. Let's see what you chose.
Hello, I'm Liliane Montevecchi, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP, Haunts by Austin. Bonsoir, bonjour, and I love you all. Je vous aime tous beaucoup. Au revoir, mes chéris.
Very good choice, Lisa B. Thompson.
How do you not love Lily?
She was great. I reordered all those on the CD, and I listened to them on the way over here. I had so much. There are some really fun ones.
Lillian Montevecchi is everything, man.
Lillian Montevecchi, she was great. This is a premiere piece being done at the Vortex called Underground. What's it all about?
It's about thinking about the Underground Railroad from the past and what modes of freedom people thinking about now. So it's playing on this idea of the Underground Railroad and what's next.
I ask with my tongue firmly implanted in my cheek, what makes you want to tell this story now?
I've been wanting to tell the story actually for quite some time. I lived in Los Angeles during the L.A. uprising, or you want to call it, people call it the riots. I was working at a university at the time, and saw and lived in under state of emergency and watched the city burn and neighborhoods burn and people.
That was the you're talking about the Rodney King
exactly.
One.
Yep. Yes, mm-hmm. Interesting. And interesting that, you know, he gets the name for it, but it really was the freedom of the officers.
Correct.
Riot, really.
Correct.
Right.
Well, and that was that's been repeated so often.
Yes.
Exactly. I don't know if you remember the ones in Miami in the 80s.
Yes.
I was there was fortunate enough to be there for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically the same exact story. It was a
black motorist.
A black motorist. This one was on a motorcycle, mm-hmm. Shot by a cop, and the cops were exonerated. And you go, what? Like, mm-hmm. That's what I did.
Yes.
But actually, it's interesting you should say that. So when you say the difference between, the riots and uprising, I almost was going to ask you why make that distinction. But as soon as before that got anywhere close to actually leaving my lips, I totally get it. And that's so much more appropriate.
And you know, living through that and being an educator at the time and working with young people and the way in which living through it and watching how the media was reporting on it, and the state of emergency people were in, and also the sense of the city closing in around you, the freeways being closed.
Right.
So I decided how to replicate that. I also lived in Los Angeles. I'm sorry, lived in upstate New York during 9/11. So another way in which emergency is happening, and you know, what do we do? So I thought, and also being a native Californian, moving to upstate New York, the snow, which you've experienced, is very different. So using the snow now as the way to kind of create curfew, which we were under in L.A., and think about what is it like to be in a situation where you can't get out and have something going on across the country the whole world's looking at.
So how do you tell this large story within the context of this play, Underground, and how does Mark come into play with telling that story? Tell us about what audiences would come to expect when they come to see this show.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and my partner in crime, Jeffrey Dashe Johnson, is feeling a little under the weather today. But we play two characters, Kyle and Mason. I play Kyle. They meet 30 years before the story starts in college. Kyle is the leader of the Black Student Association, and he takes Mason under his wing. They participate in divestment activities to end apartheid.
Right.
30 years later, we catch up with them, and they're middle-aged men. Mason is a corporate attorney. Kyle is an activist, but also depending on how you call him, he could be a domestic terrorist. So Kyle comes to pay Mason a visit, and that unfolds for the next 90
And is it
or
done?
So.
Chess is involved here somehow.
There is. That's a metaphor that we use, and I think Rudy can address that.
Talk
a little
about
bit
Rudy. Let's talk about the metaphor of chess and as it relates.
Well, chess, it's interesting because, I mean, it's such a, you know, the moment they bring up chess in the script, you know, you have, the immediately Kyle makes fun of Mason for liking chess and says, like, oh, this is a white person game, you know, but they start playing it and they talk about, you know, how, like, Mason learned from his uncle who was in prison, Kyle learned from his father, and it really becomes about the fact that this is this two-person game of strategy and space with one another, only that the board is, on the one hand, it's Mason's nicely and comfortably, welcomingly decorated Albany brownstone, but also their struggle for their people and their struggle for liberation and this question of, like, what is the strategy, you know, this Kyle's demand for Mason to be bold in a way that he hasn't been bold in 30 years, and Mason trying to negotiate this idea of, well, what are going to be the consequences of this? What is the risk? And is this worth the risk now? And so it's very much, instead of it being like pawns and kings and knights and queens and things like that, it's their memories, it's their relationship with one another, it's like the stakes that each one has with their own families. You know, they're deploying all these things against one another.
I think it's just, as someone who's never, just the way you described that was so beautiful, to see a black man and a white man sitting down at a black and white checkerboard.
No, they're both black. They're both black.
Oh, wait a minute. I thought you said that. So they're both black men.
Yeah, indeed, right. They're both.
Oh, then scratch that.
You say corporate attorney.
But Lisa B. Thompson, there's your next show.
Yeah, right? No. I totally heard that wrong.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, awesome. Yeah, that changes the construct.
But
in my mind.
It's an interesting metaphor. And so there is conflict. And do we end up with a winner at the end in this show?
You'll, I don't want to push you to... call you to action, but
you'll have to see. Best way to find out.
All right, I'm hoping the audiences will be the winners.
Yeah,
because this is a question we're all facing.
Oh, I like that answer.
Yeah, we're facing that right now. What are we going to do? Are we going to call your congressman or something else to change what we're not happy with?
One of the things we were talking about before we started the show, Rudy, when we were talking about the challenges and how they're sort of good challenges and how much work has gone behind this one and what makes this particular show maybe unique from others. Can you talk a little bit about that in the pre-production and the rehearsal process?
I mean, this is one where, you know, I was talking with my friend Sarah about this, and she said there's nowhere to hide in this play. She'd seen the first reading of it. And, you know, it's a thing where this is two men talking with one another and having this very intense sort of psychological engagement with one another that does not stop, you know? So it's one that is so purely based in their thoughts and their emotions. And so that's something that we've been working on ever since, you know, the beginning of this. Like Lisa and I, we both Lisa's a professor at UT and I was working with her as a grad student there. And it's just from day one, it's been about like, what is the psychology behind the philosophy and vice versa? You know, how has history shaped them? How are they trying to shape history?
Wow. And as I listen to this, it seems pretty deep and engaging. And I, as an audience member, feel like I might be sort of brought into this and along with the emotional ride. Are there highs and lows? Will we laugh in this play at all?
It's all comedy. No, I'm kidding.
It's slapstick.
Lisa jokes, but there are funny moments. There are real, genuinely funny moments that I have to keep a straight face every night. And then there are dark pits of your soul that are exposed and bear it out for everybody to see. So
Mark, Austin audiences have seen you in a lot of things, from Shakespeare to musicals to all over the place. What's a specific challenge about this role in this new piece that you're coming up against in your artistic process?
This one has, you know,
Mark Puhay.
No, that's
speechless.
This is a. There's just so much weight. Mm-hmm. There's so much importance in the show and in the message and in the writing and in the interaction between two black men on stage. The focus, like we said, there's nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. And I thrive on it, but it's terrifying. Yeah. So I'm just being honest.
A good time to be telling this story.
Yes. Very good time.
Well, it's topical, and yet it's been always. It should have been topical for the past 150 years, if not more than that. It's very, very topical, so very top of mind right now.
Give a shout out to Bonnie Cullum at the Vortex for being the brave artistic director that she is.
Yes,
and the Vortex being a site that people can do this kind of work. So I want to definitely just really honor her bravery and support of the show.
Yeah. And Bonnie is consistently awesome. Bringing things to the Austin audiences that you don't really see anywhere else, and that you are really, her and some other really brave theater companies here are bringing work that make people think, that bring things to the forefront, that makes us uncomfortable. Yeah.
This is actually partnered with the Warfield Center at UT.
Yes.
This is the first of three productions that are their new plays by African American women. We're gonna have Ebony Stewart's next show, Ocean, is gonna be part of it, and also Tyler English Beckwith, who is a UT undergrad, who's now at NYU.
NYU
For playwriting. Her play 28.
And they'll all be done at the Vortex?
They'll all be done at the Vortex.
Excellent.
Oh, that's way great. Yes. Way great.
Excellent,
way
cool. Excellent. And so when do you guys open?
We open this Friday.
It's Friday.
Dun, dun, dun.
No pressure.
No, there's no pressure. It's easy. Y'all are going to be ready.
It's my mother's birthday weekend.
Jeffrey's not well.
Yeah, no. I mean, so it's...
So we're going to shout out to him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Send some positive vibes his direction.
Send positive
tummy
vibes.
We love you, Jeffrey.
Positive tummy vibes.
So, Rudy, did you make him sick?
No, I'm sure everybody's sick on this show.
I can confirm or deny.
I doubt it. Who are some of the other players that who did the scenic and lighting and things like that?
So it's Anne-Marie and Patrick, who are resident like set and lighting designers. We have a new tech director here at the Vortex, Brandy Alexander, who's been great.
Really,
that is her name.
Yes,
amazing.
Yes.
With an I. She said it's with an I. So I'm not a cocktail. She has said that many a time. And
how I didn't learn to play Jen.
The best is we need to have Tito Beveridge and Brandy Alexander together in a room.
Nice.
And then that's just
nice.
There you go.
It. And you know we have David Damaris, our sound designer, is mentoring a new sound designer on the show. So we have we have people of color on the design team as well, which is awesome.
That is.
And so and it's creating this house, this space, like building it slowly has been really beautiful as well, because like it's so welcoming and it's so comforting and inviting, but what's going to happen there is anything but. It's much more taught.
Exactly. So you guys are at the Vortex, as you said. Where can folks go to get more information?
You can go to Lisa.
VortexRep.org.
Right.
Or call them at 512-478-5282. Operator standing by. No, just kidding. I don't really know.
Where do you... So we know you open this Friday. When do you close?
April 8th.
April 8th.
So each night, it's 8 p.m. shows from Wednesday through Sunday.
Awesome. Yeah. And the wonderful thing about the Vortex is you've got the butterfly bar there.
Yes.
And you have Patrizzi's, if I'm saying that correctly.
Yes. I think they are.
So you can eat and drink and fill your soul all at the same time.
It's such a cool little space, too.
And we give away 10 free tickets every night at 7 p.m. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing
awesome.
That.
So thank you guys for being on the show. Hopefully or some of you can stick around and join us backstage because we have fun back there.
Oh, yeah.
And best of luck with you with the show.
Thank you,
Lisa.
Okay. That was Rudy Ramirez, Lisa B. Thompson, and Mark Puhay of Vortex Rep production of Lisa B. Thompson's Underground at the Vortex, March 24th through April 8th. For more information, vortexrep.org.
What we've just seen's a pathetic...
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Nicole. And Nick. Sorry, I just went. I was trying to like shake it up a little bit. And then, of course, Bob Tolero is here as well. We've been talking to Mark Puhay, Lisa B. Thompson, and Rudy Ramirez. And let's just jump right into today in theater history, shall we?
We shall.
But we have to say something again. I'm not hearing you.
We shall.
Oh, there you go. You're just not speaking into the microphone. But we're going to have to like tap dance for a little second because my printer broke and I have to wait for my computer to turn on.
So in the meantime, we can just sing the Today in Theater History song.
Today in Theater History.
Yes. That's exactly the direction I would have gone to for that song.
Well, we were making it new and exciting for you.
It was.
I just want to say back to that previous thing, making theater affordable and giving 10 free tickets makes me really, really happy. Kudos to you guys for doing that. That's really,
excellent,
really
excellent.
Cool.
I need to jump right into Today in Theater History.
Today in Theater History.
We got to load it.
So today is like it's birthday day, isn't it?
Yes, bon anniversaire.
And we're gonna start with the birthdays. We typically do those at the end, but there's just been a lot. And I know this is the one that you've been waiting for, Nicole and Nick. It is Carl Malden's birthday.
Oh. I have been waiting. How'd you know?
It is Carl Malden. He was born in 1912. Mm-hmm.
I was gonna guess 10. I made him older than he was.
Yeah, you did.
Didn't need to be.
Okay, it's also... Let's just have a moment of silence before I say this next one.
Okay.
Marcel Marceau.
You know
what you did.
You know I took some classes as the Marcel Marceau, but do you know that sadly people don't know who he is anymore than this generation? And I'm like, that's sad.
But there's a great children's book about him.
There is? What's it called?
It was called the Blue Bonnet book, and I went to Google it.
Children can't read anymore, so
poor children.
Okay, there aren't any words.
We'll put it on the website. Yes.
It's also, no, I don't know this person, Stephen Sondheim. It is his birthday.
Esteban.
He was born in 1930.
Wow.
Not productive, though.
Interestingly enough, currently having 4 shows on Broadway right now, Lord
Webber.
Andrew Lloyd Webber. Wow. Also his birthday.
Whoa.
Extra points if anybody can tell me how much younger Webber is than Sondheim.
That's a mean game.
I'm going to say... Sondheim, what year did you say? He was 30? I'm going to say Webber's 44, 45. It was born.
Okay. Not bad. I'm thinking of the same number that Lisa B. Thompson thought of.
Wow.
18 years different. So that would be 48.
Wow.
So I was close. 69 years this year. 69. Mm-hmm.
But I got to check and see if that's the last. Wow. So, well, okay. So the other birthdays are William Shatner.
Oh,
of
my
course.
Gosh, yes.
And Werner Klempner.
What?
Who I saw on Broadway, and yeah, I saw him on Broadway in the 70s, and I'm sorry I could not get Colonel Klink out of my mind as I saw him there. I also saw Fred Gwynne on Broadway. I forgot what show I did, but I couldn't. So Werner Klempner is Colonel Klink, mm-hmm. and Herman Munster was Fred Gwynne.
Right, and he did The Oldest Living Graduate. It's very difficult to watch someone play a role when they're so... I think Danny has the same issue going on with the
maybe.
Press.
Maybe. Mm. All right, we got to roll because
it's my mother's big birthday this weekend.
And yay, it's Liz's birthday.
It's her big 70th. She's,
oh, big 70.
And it's Elton John's too. They share the same birthday, so we can
Lion
keep it Broadway
King,
like.
Tying that in.
There you go.
Yep.
Elton John did not make my. Oh, because it's not today.
It's the 25th of March.
All right, I gotta keep rolling, or we're not gonna have time for what we need to do. Hot L Baltimore opened with Judd Hirsch at Circle in the Square. That's a Lanford Wilson play. God of Carnage opened in New York in 2009. And I'm not going to mention that because I want to talk about it and I don't have time. And then what did I want to talk about? Oh, Barbara Streisand and Elliot Gould, 1962. Anybody know the show? I Can Get It for You Wholesale.
Ah, thank you.
So that's it. We're just gonna run away because we need to have time to hear our interview for Beautiful. So let's hear a little bit of I Can Get It For You Wholesale. It's just all sorts of fun. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared. Oh my God, my microphone was
high. We just need to jump right into this. Hopefully, we'll have time to talk afterwards. But Beautiful. The Carole King musical opened in Austin last night. I saw it. I think am I the only one here that saw it? Nobody else saw it.
I think you might be.
Quite fun, but we interviewed last week, Nicole and I interviewed the man who played Jerry Goffin. His name is Liam Tobin, and he was delightful. So shall we hear a little bit of that interview? Here we go. Hello, everybody. We have by phone Mr. Liam Tobin. He plays Jerry Goffin in the Broadway Across America's great tour of the Carole King musical, Beautiful. Welcome to Offstage and On the Air, Liam.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I just realized, did I mispronounce your name? Tell me I didn't.
No.
Excellent.
Look at that.
That makes you special because I mispronounce everybody else's name. So you play the bad guy, don't you?
I suppose in a sense. We don't really like to call him the bad guy. I think he's at his heart, he's a really good guy. You know, he just makes a lot of mistakes. You know, he mm-hmm. wants to be a good husband, a good father, and a good friend and stuff. But, you know, he doesn't really make it happen a lot of the times. And I think that kind of pairs him up a little more and sends him a little further down the rabbit hole, if you will.
Well, he was certainly in real life a very talented man. For those listeners that aren't familiar with the show Beautiful, can you just tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. So, most people know Carole King and a lot of her music, but I guess what they don't know is the story behind it. And so we see Jerry Goffin, her first husband, and Carole King meeting in 1959 in Queens College and becoming writing partners and having a child right off the bat and getting married very young. And you get to see all the hits that they churned out for so many groups like the Drifters. You know, they wrote Up on the Roof, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow for the Shirelles, Natural Woman, so many hits. And you get to see the personal struggles that they had going on behind the music and kind of what fueled a lot of those amazing songs that they had written.
Yeah, it's amazing when you look at the story, the things that they've written. And I'm a person of a certain age, and I didn't realize they wrote for Herman's Hermits, who I just loved Herman's Hermits,
right.
And the Monkees.
The catalog is just...
It's amazing.
Amazing. You go, whoa.
You do. That's exactly what you do. Whoa. And so they were married for 1 year and have one child. Is that correct?
No, they were married for...
I mean 10 years.
Yeah.
59 to 69.
Right, yeah. But yeah, they had two children together, actually.
Well, I don't like the other one.
So they, I mean, a lot of people know Carol post the Tapestry album,
right?
1971. But in the show, we get to see it primarily focuses off before the Tapestry album and how Carole King got to be the Carole King that everybody kind of knows now.
So you guys have been on the road. You're currently we should say that we're pre-recording this here in Austin, Texas. We're recording this on March 8th. You're in New Orleans right now.
We are, yeah. We're here for the whole week.
Yeah, are you having a good time there?
Exciting time to be there.
Yeah, I know. Well, we just missed Mardi Gras, but it's a really cool town. I'm excited for Austin, though.
Well, have you been here before?
I haven't, no, but my dad has a few times, and he loves it.
Yeah, I remember seeing your dad around town back then. That was great. What are you looking forward to when you get here? I'm sort of a smartass, Liam. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So am I.
What are you looking forward to when you get here?
I'm looking forward to, getting back into some hot weather. Not that it's been cold here, but, you know.
I should remind you that you're in New Orleans right now. It's hot there most times.
And aren't you from Canada? So wouldn't that be warm?
It is. But I think that Texas must be hotter. I like to get lost in cities and just see what I find. And oftentimes that's the most fun thing I'll do in a new city. So I'm excited to do that in Austin, too.
Awesome. Well, there are a few requirements once you get here. You must have the Tex-Mex, and you must have the barbecue.
Ooh, I love barbecue.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good barbecue in this city.
Right. Those are the two requirements. They will not let you out of town unless you have done those. You have to show those at the airport. So the musical is I cannot tell you how excited I am to see it. I've gone to New York several times, but I've purposely not seen it because I knew it was coming here, and I knew you were going to be in it. I wanted to see you in the role.
Oh, great! Well, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, at the end of the show, everybody's up in the aisles dancing and singing along and clapping and cheering and stuff. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun for everybody, I'm sure.
It's hard not to. I should remind folks, I went back to the beautiful webpage today, and in the little video they have on the homepage is the little section where Carole King finally came to see the show, and she came to see it, I don't remember how long after, but it was a long while after it opened.
Is it 100,000 or something?
It was so beautiful. Have you seen that clip?
I think I have, yeah. But she's come out to the tour a couple times as well. She came out in Boise, Idaho.
Well,
she has a farm outside there. But she's always super cool, super gracious, just kind of exactly what you think she would be. She's kind of the sweetest woman around.
Awesome. So how long have you been with the tour? From the beginning?
I've been with the tour from the beginning, so I guess about a year and a half now.
Great.
Oh, that's cool.
And can you regale us with any wonderful stories from the road?
I don't know. I suppose that's a tough one. Every city is so different, and, you know, even every show, and every theater too. So they all have their own little flavor.
I hear you. Well, we're really looking forward to having you here, in Austin with the show. And you have a great pedigree of shows that you have done.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, I've been lucky enough to get to play a kind of a range of things. You know, sometimes people end up getting typecast, but I managed to break out of my little bubble, if you will, and try some other roles, which has been a lot of fun.
Right. Now, you're in the international tour of West Side Story playing Tony. Did y'all do the version that brought in the Spanish, the latest Broadway production version?
No, it wasn't that one at all. It was... They called it a remount of the original, so it was as true as they could have been to the original 57 production in New York.
That's cool.
Well, West Side Story has a very dear place in my heart. It was the very first musical I ever saw. Yeah, and it was, and I knew Larry Kurt, who was the original Tony, fairly well before he passed away. So I feel a certain je ne sais quoi with
a certain affinity,
with that show. What's your favorite show to have done? And two-part question. What's your favorite show that you have done, and what are you looking forward to doing?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I would say Maybe my favorite one that I've done was Elf.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically, you know, all the fooling around and everything that you do backstage in rehearsal was just happened to be on stage. And instead of getting told, like, hey, stop doing that, you know, focus, that was everything was praised, you know, for all the silliness that you would do and the things that you could think of. So I had a really great time doing that one, for sure. As for what I'm looking forward to, I don't know. I try to keep myself open to kind of anything because you never know what you'll enjoy most or what will surprise you. But I've always wanted to do Into the Woods.
Ah, that's another good one.
That is a good one. Do you have? Are we looking at the Baker or are we looking at somebody else?
I wanted to do Cinderella's Prince because he gets to play the wolf as well.
That's true. I was about to say the wolf. That's a yes.
And I like the Agony song.
Agony.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't really dislike any songs. I don't.
Well, I don't dislike any, but that one's just sort of fun.
It is fun.
Because
it's fun. That's why. well, that's great. So you don't want to do King George III because I had a space on the New York production that I was going to give you the role if you wanted
it. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, of course. I take it back. I take it all back.
Okay. Liam Tobin, thank you so much for joining us on Offstage and on the Air.
Thanks for having me.
And we look so forward to seeing you in the show. Actually, by the time this airs, I will have seen you. So I should tell everybody that you were fantastic.
Oh, that is right. Well, you're smart like that, Lisa.
I have never seen a better production or never a person, actor playing that role. But thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy your stay in Austin and break a leg on the show.
Thanks so much. Looking forward to it. And thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Liam Tobin. He plays Jerry Goffin in Broadway Across America's production of Beautiful, the Carol King musical, playing now through March 26th at Bass Concert Hall. For more information, austin.broadway.com.
Take good care of my baby.
All right, we just have time to say goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Austin Monitor News is next if you're listening on the broadcast. If you're listening on the podcast, stand by for Backstage at Offstage. Nicole, Nick, and Lisa will be back next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. We'll see you later. We're going out with Dear Evan Hansen, if this works.
So you found a place where the grass is greener, and you jump the fence to the other side. Is it good? Are they giving you a world I could never
survive? Well, the curtain has just come down on Tiny the Musical, the story of three friends searching for other friends in the big, deep world of electronic something. I'm lost. Help me. Can't find it. Never mind. So we're here backstage, and we have one guest with us today, which is also – Nicole and I talk about this all the time. I'm always excited when we just get one person here.
Yeah. It's hard to dive in and ask more than one question when we're – I mean, I love the full group because sometimes you get nice one answer, funny one-offs. But.
Right. So we have Lisa B. Thompson here with us. Welcome backstage.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I hope you navigated the steps okay and are okay with the dumpsters that are lying around here.
Yes.
Good, good. It's
easy. I'm used to this.
Yep. So this is we are right outside the backstage door, and this is where we get to learn a little bit about you. We heard all about your show, but we need to know about you. Mm-hmm. I heard that you you grew up in upstate New York.
No, I grew up in San Francisco, town.
It's a toddling town, though.
It is tiny.
You grew up in San Francisco,
yes.
In the city itself?
I was born in the 60s in the middle of San Francisco.
Awesome.
With a headband and hippie Noak City.
Were you like in the Haight? Or?
Actually, I grew up in the Outer Mission by Lakeview, and my parents had four kids in 14 years. I was the child. Oh, my God.
So you're the youngest. Another one.
Yes.
Give me one of these.
Yes.
Because I'm the youngest, too, the baby.
But I was like,
she's the oldest.
Yeah. They were like, no. And I was like, that's why I'm funny. Because I'm like,
so
I
were there borrow three, time. Were there three, like, close together and then you?
With kind of like two sets.
Two sets.
You know, my sister and brother, they're 3 years apart. And then it was like a 7
God bless your parents'
and
hearts. Then, they spent their lives raising children.
Yeah, and then the end was, and that came on the rear, like, hey. Yeah. So I'm here for 18 years. It's going to be funny.
I've rooted in San Francisco. I like San Francisco.
Love San Francisco. I always said I wanted to live there before I died. And
I just don't do earthquakes. So unfortunately, that kind of poses a problem.
If you grow up there, it's normalized. It's like I can tell what it is on the scale after the earthquake. I'm like, that's a 5.
I experienced an earthquake in the city of Manhattan.
Yes.
Yeah.
It happened in the middle of the night. Yeah. I didn't know it was an earthquake. Something woke me up. And then I heard it on the news, and it was a little, it was a tremor.
It wasn't
much of anything. So you were in San Francisco, and so you are a playwright.
Yes.
Are you also a performer?
I am a professor. So I perform in class twice a week.
What are you a professor of?
I love that I perform a class
at UT Austin. I'm a professor of African diaspora studies, which is a lot of language for black studies, basically, that looks at black studies internationally. Mm-hmm. And my work is on African Americans and African American performance. And this semester I'm teaching a class called The Black Middle Class. It looks at representations of the black middle class in terms of films and plays and as well as sociological texts. So students kind of think about what it means to be black and middle class, which is kind of tied into the
now,
play.
The middle, would middle class be, August Wilson Fences? Is that middle class?
No,
or
it's working class.
That's so, working
his,
class. Right.
His real strength, his focus was on class, the black working class and every man. And, Troy is illiterate, basically, and, can't drive. Yeah. So not college, not educated. And interesting enough, my work is on the black middle class. My first play, Single Black Females, about two black middle class women, a businesswoman and her friend who's a professor. And this play that I'm doing now is two middle class folks.
Right. The unfortunate part about our world is we don't think of black people and being middle class. And I'm as mm-hmm. guilty of that as anybody. I had a friend, we went to Martha's Vineyard, and there's a black middle class section.
Generations.
And that's where we were. Mm-hmm. And it was this entire black life that I had no... It was quite an education for this white girl. It was great. We had a great time.
Yeah.
Awesome
Inkwell. Right. But I go there. Yeah, we go there every summer. It's where I go to write, actually.
Oh, do you?
To Martha's Vineyard?
Yes.
That's so funny. I grew up going there as a kid. With my grandmother was in Rhode Island.
It's beautiful. But yes.
All right. So you've written how many plays?
I've written probably short plays and full length, four. And working on three right now.
And do you, you're a professor of African studies. African-American studies,
yes.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And my mouth usually goes before my brain.
No, it's a lot of language.
Forgive me in advance. So one wouldn't necessarily think those two go together.
Which
per
one?
Per se. Playwriting and African-American studies.
Actually, I also teach African-American theater.
Okay, there's the connection.
My main department is our department is African Diaspora Studies, but I'm affiliated with Women and Gender Studies. I'm affiliated with English. I'm also affiliated with theater and dance. They all want a piece of me. But I enjoy
I love that. Bastards. So Women's Studies... English and theater and dance.
And Black Studies. So and,
besides
so,
all that. Yes. Yeah,
so,
wow.
So my classes are pretty full of... texts by women. I teach from I'm a black feminist, from that perspective. And so that you're getting, you get a lot of bang for the buck with me at UT Austin, which is wonderful. I enjoy it. So I grew up in San Francisco and went to grad school at UCLA and Stanford. And then my first job was in upstate New York at SUNY Albany.
I was about to say, how did you end up there? It was
SUNY Albany. So that was a fantastic offer from them and went off to teach in the English department where I was the only African American at the time, and it was interesting to
really
at SUNY.
Yes. Oh, in English.
Oh, okay.
And that's a department that has some of the most largest number of black English majors in the country. In the top 10 in terms of, so they have one black professor was kind of not great. So now I'm in the Black Studies department. It's the biggest one in the country, which is nice for us.
I'm trying to figure out when mm-hmm. the playwriting started. How did you?
Oh, that's a great story.
I was like, her face just lit up when you asked that too.
Playwriting happened in a senior seminar I took with Intozake Shange at UCLA.
Lovely.
And she said to us, it was a class on, I can't even remember what kind of class it was. It wasn't a playwriting class. It was a class on black theater and performance and whatever she wanted to do because she's Shange. And she asked us, hey, do you, first day of class, people just write something. And I wrote this monologue and sitting in class, just wrote, and she said, anyone wants to share? And I read this thing, and people looked at me after, and they're like, you had that in your bag. And I was like, no, and it was really good. And I was like, this is interesting. Put it away, because I'm like thinking, okay, I want to go to law school or something like that. This, you know, responsible. And then when I was a graduate student at Stanford, I took a class with Sherry Moraga, who's author of Loving the World Years, and This Bridge Caught My Back, Latina lesbian feminist writer. And I wrote, it was an official playwriting class, and wrote a play called Monroe, the first drama I wrote, and it was about the black migration from the South to California, which is what my family did. And because everyone else went to Detroit and New York, right. Chicago, mm-hmm. and he's like, who are these people that thought, no, let's go to California? You know? and they never get anywhere.
It's always amazing where people end up. You know, my family came over from Eastern Europe around the turn of the century with a second wave of Jewish migration. Okay. And they ended up in Muskegon, Michigan. And there's a huge Jewish population there. And you go, what?
Wow.
A lot of my friends, the Jewish population, yes. Russian Jewish population, immigrated to Schenectady.
Yes. Yep. Where my son went to the Jewish Community Center for his child care for most of his young life.
Yeah. It is interesting how these spaces. I love ancestry and family trees and history.
And movement, right?
Yeah.
So what is your writing process?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Finish the story. So at Stanford, so write this play. Have a stage reading. This young kid was undergrad there, does a reading for my play, who's now this big star on TV. It's kind of funny. Sterling K. Brown, who I think is doing great on This Is Us.
We love him. Sterling. Right. I've been obsessed with him since Army
Wives.
Oh,
my God.
And people goes, what? I watched that show, Army Wives.
He was your student?
I was a grad student.
For Sterling.
He was undergrad, and I needed somebody for the play, and he read that role. I'm like, I told people he's going to be a star. I was right.
He's amazing.
Awesome. He's been like that since he was a child. So that's an interesting story. So from that, my teacher says, once you join a playwriting group in San Francisco with real playwrights, and I was like, sure. Thinking, oh my God. And that's where I start writing kind of the anti-dissertation. So writing my dissertation as a graduate student and also writing this play that was what I couldn't put in the dissertation.
Because you just had all sorts of spare time on your hands.
I was about to say, how does one have time? I couldn't even wrap my head around writing. Taking the time to do both of them.
What I've learned is like who you are comes out no matter what. And here I'm trying to fight it. I was telling my friends it was going to be a reading of our works in progress, and I said, well, I can't do that. You know, I'm working on my oral examinations at Stanford University. And they're like, listen, honey, we need a woman in it. It's a woman's theater. We need a woman in the thing. We're two men. I'm like, okay. And then someone heard it. Applause are happening after the reading, and someone comes up from Theater Rhinoceros in San Francisco, and she says, I want it for next season. That's how my career began.
That is an amazing story. I'm really crazy.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. There, it's kind of gone on and gone on and gone on, and then, I've gone on and gone on as other track as a scholar, and I realized, okay, I'm both. And so I talk about myself as a scholar artist, and mm-hmm. I do both, and I both things enrich each other, and I've been able to bring a lot of artists to UT Austin through the Warfel Center's Performing Blackness series. So I brought Stu from Passing Strange. I brought Coleman Domingo, A Boy in the Soul, who has a new show, Dot, he just did, with Susan Stroman, directed. Get a chance to meet her and do a talk back with them. I brought Issa Davis. I've brought, worked with other faculty to bring Tanya Pinkins. Really wonderful. Be able to bridge those worlds together. These people I actually know. So it's been nice to do that. Yes.
Well, that is awesome. So I really have one last question because it's purely selfish. And I think that many people probably have a play or a book mm-hmm. or a screenplay inside of them. So the hardest part is like starting at that first blank sheet of paper. What would you tell a student that came to you and said, hey, Professor Thompson, I want to write a play, but I don't know how to start.
What was so wonderful for me taking that first playwriting class gave me that answer. It's having someone give you a prompt and then sit there and write, and don't just write for 10 minutes and don't stop and let the character come out. Because really, I think so much of writing is so the subconscious. So giving them a prompt. I think one prompt I've always loved is, I did a bad thing, and then just go. And figure out what is the bad thing. Because we all have done something bad.
Yes.
I'm going to take a quick tangent because you just made me think of something. I listen to podcasts, and one of the podcasts I listen to is a Grammar Girl guy. But she said you can always take any first opening line from any novel and then add the sentence directly after that, and then the killings began. And she read a few, like Tale of Two Cities and other ones, and it's really funny to do that.
I'm doing that.
So just go pick up a book, read the first line in an ad, and then the killings began. And it's really kind of funny.
I love that.
So, well, that's great. Unfortunately, well, actually, before you go, we're going to, you know, yesterday I was backstage with Liam Coben of Beautiful, and we had a little chat. So let's take a second to listen to that.
Yes.
Hey, look who's come backstage. It's Liam Coben from Beautiful that we heard from earlier, and we get to learn just a little bit more about him. Hey, Liam, welcome to the backstage area amongst the dumpsters back here.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing good. I hope the dumpster's aroma isn't too off-putting for you.
I'm used to it by now.
Good, excellent.
Ah, he's a team player.
Listen, in reading about you, I just had one of my favorite things about you, and I believe you're new at this. You're a private pilot.
I am. Yeah, it's something I always had wanted to do, and I knew I had this job coming up, and I had the funds lying around, so I figured if not now, then when? So, yeah.
Well, listeners of this program know that I as well. I haven't flown in a while, but I'm a private pilot. What did you fly 172s?
Yeah, 172 SP, yeah.
Excellent.
That's so cool.
What do you love about flying and how it relates to theater?
I don't know. I feel like you get a different perspective up in the air, you know, and, you know, kind of everything seems a little smaller, including your problems and your trials and tribulations. So it is, I mean, it's so much fun to just fly a plane, but I suppose it's a little therapeutic in that regard as well, which, you know, it can definitely help as an actor.
So tell us briefly how you found your way into theater. Where did that love get sparked for you?
Well, I was a sports guy. You know, I played basketball and soccer and volleyball, and that was kind of like all I did. And then when I was in high school, I had a bunch of friends who were doing a community theater production of, I think it was Peter Pan, and they would not shut up about how fun it was, and this happened at rehearsal, and that happened, and I was like, fine, I'll try out for the next one. And it was a community theater production of Beauty and the Beast in St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada. And when I got there and was having the time of my life and realized that people would actually pay you to do this, I figured there was nothing else I could possibly do.
That was it. And so you set your sights on being a triple threat, and the rest is history?
I suppose so, yeah. Yeah, I went to Sheridan College outside of Toronto for music theater. And then, just started booking some work. And, you know, one thing led to another. And I've managed to keep working.
Well, Toronto has an incredible theater scene, too.
It does.
Yeah, they really do. Mm-hmm.
So I do need you to know that you completely won Nicole over, A, by being a sports person.
Yes.
And two, by having Peter Pan be your spark.
Well, awesome.
Yes, I was smiling back here very big. You just can't see it on the radio.
Well, thanks again for joining us backstage. And like I said, enjoy Austin while you're here.
Okay, thanks. I can't wait to come by.
Okay, Liam, thanks so much. I just love him.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was fun.
I'm so glad
he was here.
Amazing.
So, I know. It's great. And he did such a great job
at
Beautiful.
And we let him back out to get to the theater.
Yeah, he made it to the theater. So, as you know, speaking of that, I would just take this other little tangent. I am driving a rideshare car right now. And yesterday, I picked up the company manager for Beautiful.
Wow.
By coincidence.
That's crazy.
And, of course, I gave her my card because I'm looking for a stage management gig. So I said, and she knew the company manager, the general management of this tour is Charlotte Wilcox, who is a woman that made my career back in the day.
Wow.
And so we knew a lot of the same people
That's
together.
Fabulous.
So it was
sort
of funny.
I love how the world
And she
works.
Was, yes. So I'm just a little cab driver to her. And so I'm always making conversation. What do you do? And she says, well, I'm a company manager at the theater. And I went, oh, and she was like very excited because nobody knows
nobody
what that
knows
is.
Right,
what
exactly.
She means. Yeah, what
so
she
important.
Means. That's hilarious.
So you had mentioned before we came on the air that you don't sing. But do you like musicals?
I love musicals.
Do you have a musical that's your favorite? And in particular, any particular yes. song that you would call your favorite right this very second?
Not a favorite song. The musical, I just taught it recently, Passing Strange. It speaks to my soul. I just cry every time I teach it. So many songs. Baptist Fashion Show is pretty fun. But the last song, what is it called? It's All Right, with his mother tells him it's all right, you know.
Yeah, I actually, beautiful. I think we're listening to it right now in the background.
I love it.
Awesome. Lisa B. Thompson, thanks for joining us backstage.
Thanks for having me.
Really loved having you. Must come back.
Yes.
You must come back.
I plan to.
Okay. Sure. Bye.
Bye-bye.